I'm speaking with Alfred Meyer. He is a member of the Board of Directors of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He's co-chair of the Radiation and Health Committee for that group. PSR advocates for public health by addressing areas such as nuclear power and waste, climate change, and toxic chemicals. He's making a series of presentations in Michigan. That includes tonight, Thursday, in Kalamazoo, and also tomorrow, Friday, in South Haven. The title is Nuclear Power, What You Need to Know About Price, Pollution, and Proliferation. Alfred Meyer, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
We should explain, first of all, this speaking tour was originally booked for Dr. Jeffrey Patterson. Explain what happens here. There was unfortunately, he passed away, and you've been asked to step in. Tell us a little about Jeffrey Patterson.
Well, he was a most remarkable gentleman. He was a practicing physician, although even though he had retired, he still was seeing patients. He has been very active with Physicians for Social Responsibility since the early 80s, when a group of medical students who had heard Helen Caldicott speak recruited him to start a chapter in Wisconsin, which he did. And most recently, he was president of the organization in the year 2013. He also is a world authority on prolotherapy, a particular treatment for chronic pain conditions, taught internationally. He also ran a nonprofit organization which took teams of doctors, and I'm not talking about one or two, I'm talking about 130 or 140 doctors to Honduras and Mexico to provide free medical care. So I feel that any one of these endeavors would have taken up a lifetime's work for most people. Dr. Patterson not only did all of them, but he also had time for every individual. He was a model of compassion you would want in a physician, but he also was committed to not just addressing the problems people had, but to go to the root causes, go upstream, and stop what was causing the problems. And this was his great concern about both nuclear weapons and nuclear power, and he always saw them as inextricably linked.
And you two were good friends.
Very good friends. When I started with the Physicians for Social Responsibility 14 years ago in Wisconsin, he was one of the still a leader in that chapter, and we were very close personal friends. And his heart attack and death was completely unexpected. He was in very good physical shape, had just had a heart workup, and it was just caught us all by surprise and left a huge void. And when Kevin Camps, the organizer from Beyond Nuclear, who was working with Dr. Patterson, called me up and asked me if I could fill in for Dr. Patterson, I felt that it was the least I could do. It's a great honor to be here and to keep this work going forward.
The title of the presentation, Nuclear Power, What You Need to Know. What do we need to know about nuclear power?
Well, there's Dr. Patterson liked to have three components of what goes on with nuclear power: price, pollution, and proliferation.
Okay, let's start with price.
Well, price, let me count the different ways. I refer to it as a form of nuclear socialism. And by that, I mean that the risk has been socialized, that the taxpayer and ratepayer covers the risk, but then the profit goes to the private companies and corporations that own the facilities. And this happens through nuclear loan guarantees, where the taxpayer is guaranteeing that if the project fails, that the taxpayer will cover the debt. And numerous nuclear executives have said that without this nuclear loan guarantee program, not a single new reactor would be built in the United States of America. Another very insidious method of financing new nuclear plants is called construction work in progress. This is where a utility is allowed to bill the ratepayer additional charges to cover any costs regarding nuclear power. And this starts with even corporations considering whether or not they want to build a nuclear power reactor. And so from the get-go, the ratepayer is being saddled with the burden, and the corporation can decide at any point in this process, whether it's during the study of whether they want to do this or whether it's midstream in construction. If for some reason it just stops, that's the end of the story. The ratepayer is out of the money, and the corporation has no obligation to do anything.
Pollution.
Pollution is at every step of the nuclear fuel chain, from the mining of uranium, where there's terrible problems of radon gas and lung cancer, through the refinement and enrichment, and then the fabrication of the fuel rods, right up to the actual operation of the nuclear reactor. At a normally operating nuclear power plant, there are regular releases of radiation allowed. And we're told that this is of no concern, but our organization has great concerns about whether this is in fact the case. That the National Academy of Sciences, in their 2006 report on the biological effects of ionizing radiation, notes that all exposure to radiation is harmful to health, that all exposure is cumulative over your lifetime, and that there's no safe dose. So we find that these regular releases under normal conditions is of great concern. And of course, events like Fukushima show us that these reactors have the potential to release vast amounts of radiation into the biosphere. And at this point, we don't know scientifically the full effects of such situations, but we do know that all exposure to radiation is harmful.
And lastly, proliferation.
Nuclear reactors were conceived of, designed, and built first and foremost to produce the materials for nuclear weapons. This explains why the U.S. government and many other governments around the world are so concerned about Iran today, which is pursuing what they called peaceful nuclear power. Atoms for Peace, started by the U.S. in the early 50s, was to promote the, quote, peaceful atom. But this nuclear reactors and the whole infrastructure and technology that goes with them is the path to nuclear weapons. So we just don't see how you can separate the two.
Going back to pollution for a moment, there are some people who will make the case that nuclear power is preferable to other forms of energy which create greenhouse gases. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, there are several things wrong with it, but I first want to stop and say that we recognize that coal burning and fossil fuel burning have severe problems and immediate problems for us. So in no way do we condone the current practices. However, nuclear power is not greenhouse gas free. At an actual operating reactor, the greenhouse gas emission is very, very low. But there are considerable inputs of greenhouse gas producing activities in through the entire nuclear fuel chain. So to say that it's greenhouse gas free is inaccurate. Furthermore,
but would it be less than, say, coal or oil?
Yes, it is. I think you could say that considering the full fuel chain, it's about equivalent to natural gas. But there are some unique aspects about operating a nuclear reactor. Namely, that you're producing nuclear waste. And no country on the face of the earth has figured out what to do with nuclear waste. And this is a material that will remain dangerous for in certain isotopes up to millions of years. And so I find it to be quite arrogant that in order to boil water, which is in fact what the purpose of a operating a nuclear reactor to make electricity, the end point is boiling water. To boil water for 40 to 60 years and then leave behind the most dangerous elements known to man that will endanger the next 12,000 or more generations seems really unacceptable.
You say that no country has figured out what to do with nuclear waste. Aren't there some countries where it's recycled and used as part of the nuclear process again?
There, it's more appropriately called reprocessing, and that's where you take the irradiated fuel rods. When you operate a reactor, if I can back up and just give a little background here.
Sure.
The technical term for a used fuel rod is spent fuel, but I prefer the term irradiated fuel. It's not like your car where you put gas in the car, you drive around town for a while, then the tank's empty, it's gone. With a fuel rod, an unused fuel rod is not very radioactive or very hot. But a used fuel rod, an irradiated fuel rod, is horrifically hot, both in radiation and temperature. And in the process of the fission chain reaction, you've created all these elements, radioactive elements, and you can chop up these fuel rods and dissolve them in acid solvents and then separate the different elements. This is how we make plutonium for a plutonium bomb. And yes, you can then reuse some of those elements you've isolated. However, you have created vast new waste streams of radiated, radioactive solvents, and you've not taken away the need for a repository. So you've not solved the problems, you've actually added to it. And you've added this to this proliferation risk, because you could not steal an irradiated fuel rod. You'd be dead before you got to the door. I could have some plutonium in my briefcase, and I'd be okay with that.
The Palisades Nuclear Power Plant, about 45 minutes from here, south of South Haven, is now well over 40 years old. Mm-hmm. Should we be concerned about a nuclear plant that reaches that age?
Absolutely. If you look at the history of Palisades, you'll see that it's been a troubled plant from the get-go. It had trouble actually coming online in its construction stages. And much more recently, it's been on the very short list of one of the top four most dangerous reactors in the country due to its history of operating problems and incidents at the site. So I think that people in Michigan should be very concerned about this. They should realize that at any moment there could be a catastrophic accident. There could also be a terrorist attack. I certainly hope that would not happen, but these are kind of pre-deployed atomic weapons, if you will. And in any case, every day they're being operated, they're both emitting more radioactive gases, as well as creating more of this radioactive waste that we don't know what to do with.
If plants reach a certain age and they're taken offline, say 35, 40 years, does that make it more likely that new plants would be built?
That's hard to answer that question directly. There certainly has been a huge push by the nuclear industry over the past 10 years to create what they have called the nuclear renaissance. Ex-NRC Nuclear Regulatory Commissioner Peter Bradford always says, well, show me a masterpiece then. Because the history of the nuclear industry is that projects are always way over budget and way behind schedule. Now, in 2003 in Finland, the Areva, the French company, started to build a power plant that was going to be the flagship of the new and improved lessons learned. And it's been a disaster. It's way over budget. It's not, for every year it's been under construction, it's become a year longer, a year more behind schedule.
If we're going to get away from greenhouse gases, and as you say, we would not eliminate them with nuclear power, but if the move is to get away from that, and if we're going to say that nuclear power is too risky to build more plants and that plants as old as Palisades and others need to be shut down, do we as the American public have to make some changes in our lifestyle to use less energy?
Well, curiously, there is a book published in 2007 that you can download free online titled Carbon Free, Nuclear Free, A Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. And this book, written by Arjun Makajani, you can get it at www.ieer.org. But Dr. Makajani assumed the American lifestyle. Now, it's curious that Europeans use half as much electricity per capita. But you and I know that life in Paris is only half as good as it is here in Kalamazoo. But this book assumes both current lifestyle, and it's based on existing technology. So it's not in need of any new scientific advance. And in 2007, Dr. Makajani lays out how we can phase out coal burning and nuclear power plants and still maintain our standard of living. And subsequent to its publication, because we're now in 2014, Dr. Makajani says that there are even more opportunities to do this faster.
Can you give us a Cliff Notes version here, 40 seconds or so, of what we would have to do instead?
No.
Okay.
But it's you know, renewables, conservation, efficiency, conservation and efficiency are considered the low-hanging fruit. But there are many things, you know, already the Navy, for instance, in California has put in their big parking lots, they put solar arrays that shade the cars. So think of it. You could drive to work, park your car in the shade, which is better for your car, and plug it in and charge it for free. So there's so many opportunities. There's so many advances in how to solve the problem of intermittency. People say, well, what about when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing? And there are many, many new ideas about how to solve this. I would point out in Germany, which is not a particularly sunny or warm climate, they get an increasing amount of their electricity from solar power. And if we can just touch on the cost issue again, the price issue, solar costs are going down precipitously, that as we move forward in time, the cost becomes much less. With nuclear, it's been a consistent upward trend of vastly increasing costs. So this supposedly mature industry doesn't seem to be able to control its costs.
As we're speaking here on Thursday morning, February 13th, you're preparing to go over for an event here at Western Michigan University, which will be held in front of some big solar panels, which allow people to charge their cars if they have such a thing. It may not be a huge, in terms of volume, effort, but are those the sort of things that you see as being a step in the direction of carbon-free and nuclear-free?
Absolutely. I think that there are so many things we can do on both the kind of small and large scale, so many new technologies to implement. And I see this as really an exciting opportunity for new jobs and new industries. And this is the kind of growth that I think the country in general needs, but certainly the Midwest here has suffered economically so dramatically that I would think that there'd be a welcoming of such new endeavors.
Assuming that we're going to have nuclear power plants for a while, would you have some ideas about the regulations, the safety measures, the precautions we can take to try and limit risk to the public in general?
I think to encourage the nuclear regulatory industry to take a stronger stand in really enforcing safety regulations and concepts would be very useful.
Shutting a plant down for when there's a safety violation in evidence, that sort of thing?
Yes, and not there's a history of when a plant can't meet a regulation, they move the goalpost, and we shouldn't do that. That, you know, regulators should not be industry friendly. They should be, in our view, they should be promoting and protecting public health. And this may cause problems in a business decision, but it's our belief that a healthy environment, a healthy biosphere is what should come first.
Alfred Meyer, thank you very much for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Alfred Meyer is a member of the Board of Directors of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He will be speaking tonight in Kalamazoo and tomorrow in South Haven.